I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. The live show is available every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. Simply search for BassGod14, that's BASSGOD14, on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. And now, on with the show. I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. Again, I want to welcome you to the show. My name is Dave Beatty. I'm one of your hosts. On tonight's show, we're going to be recommending some comic picks. We're going to be talking about Superboy Zero and Superboy Nine. And we're also going to be talking about some fun trading card picks, primarily focusing on Punisher and Daredevil. We're going to have an unboxing, which sounds like a lot of fun, as well as pop culture and streaming wars news, as always. My name is Dave Baden, one of your hosts. For nearly the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator and graphic designer. I worked a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks who will be watching or listening at home some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everyone. I'm Eric Alexander, also known as BassGod14. That's BassGod14, not BassGod. That's BassGod, like a bass guitar. And I'm the chief financial officer of Bad Bob Productions, which is a small production company located in Arizona. And currently, I am the executive producer on a film called Staycation, which is gearing up to be doing some additional filming this month in June in California.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So let's go ahead and I guess go ahead and get right into it, right? Okay. So we're going to start off the show actually with the comic picks. That's going to be the first thing we're going to cover. I'm hoping that John McClane's going to stop by today, actually, because it's his birthday. Maybe we'll get to wish another happy birthday today. We'll see how that goes. All right, now.
Who's that?
John. Whose birthday is it? McClay.
Oh, cool.
It's his birthday today. At least that's what Facebook told me.
Facebook told you, yeah. That's what I Facebook hear that. Told me.
So if he's on the show tonight, we'll definitely wish him happy birthday. All right, so.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's go ahead and get into the comic picks. Now, I have two picks. I wanted to do something different than Marvel because we've been focusing on Marvel comic picks for like the last little while. Wanted to break it up. So we're going to talk a little bit about some fun DC stuff for this evening. Now, a lot of people know that we've got a Suicide Squad 2 movie coming out. There's a trailer you can watch online. We'd love to show you the trailer and talk about it, but we can't here because we'll get in all kinds of freaking trouble. So we're not going to do that, unfortunately. However,
that's the truth.
Isn't it the truth though? But one of the characters that's in actually Suicide Squad 2 is actually King Shark. King Shark is actually going to be voiced by none other than Sylvester Stallone, of all people. And along those lines, this is not a modern book, but in my mind, it's a more modern book because it's a book that I actually collected back in the 90s. So King Shark's technical first cameo appearance was actually in Superboy number 0 from 1994. Now, this is a cameo appearance, so you don't get like a full shot of him. It's basically just kind of like some teeth, you know, kind of deal. But if you're looking forward to Suicide Squad 2, if you're excited about King Shark being in the movie, this is going to be the book that I think would be interesting to try to pick up. We're going to talk about Superboy Zero. We're going to talk about Superboy Nine. And the reason I'm recommending these, they have kind of wildly different values. You can get Superboy Zero as a raw copy, ungraded, about $10. You can actually get it for less than that. But this is one of those books that if you have an LCS, a local comic shop, if you go out there and if you peruse the 50 cent and the dollar bins, I would be willing to bet you that you might be able to find a copy of this Superboy Zero and Superboy Nine. So this is going to be our first pick. Let me go ahead and get to the second one here real quick. Now this one goes for about $10. So it's under that $20 range, but this is the main one I wanted to talk about tonight. Now this is Superboy number 9. This is their first full appearance of King Shark. It's kind of cool. You got a fun action packed cover.
That's a great cover.
Really cool. Great art by, the great, Doug Hazelwood. And, I think it's, no, is it Tom Grummet and Dick Hazelwood? Anyhow, I'm blanking a little bit. But yeah, it's a really great cover. Got King Shark featured on there. Now, this book kind of ranges depending upon the value, the kind of the quality, the grade of the book. Again, I'm going to talk about the raw copies. Raw copies of this book typically are about $35, upwards of $50. I know that's outside of my normal $20 range. But the reason I want to talk about this book is because I do really think that if you have an LCS, there's a good chance that there might be a copy of this book stuck in a 50-cent bin or even a dollar bin. I mean, I really, really think that. So it's definitely worth, you know, if you have an LCS, going out there and giving it a look. Now, for those of you who might even have copies of Superboy Zero and Superboy Nine, and let's say you're not particularly attached to them, now is your time probably to take them and actually sell them. As the anticipation is ramping up for Suicide Squad, if you don't want to own these books, if you're not attached to them, now would be the best time to take a look at actually possibly selling them. So these are going to be our two comic picks for this evening. Superboy number Zero, again, about $10 for a raw copy. And Superboy number Nine, $35 to $50, depending upon the condition. Superboy Nine, this is the second pick. What do you think about these two picks, Eric?
Well, I agree with David Motz. I love the cover. That cover is awesome. I really dig it. This is not a title that I'm that familiar with, this Superboy run. I personally didn't collect it, but I think that the artwork is great. And we talk a lot about the Marvel bump. We've got to wonder about that DC bump. You know, is that a thing? Is that something that's going to happen? Because we know pretty much anytime something comes out, you know, as a television series or a movie related to Marvel, we always see the related books have some sort of bump. You know, it might be more of a speculative option where the bump is pretty, you know, it comes and goes, it's quick, and then it goes back down again. But then there are some that I think that they do endure the test of time. You know what I mean? Where those certain key appearances, they never go down. Actually, with DC, a great example is the first appearance of Harley Quinn, which is actually, I think, Batman Adventures. It's actually the adaption of the animated series. It's not the mainstream DC version a lot of you might think of with the very famous Alex Ross cover. No, it's actually her first appearance was in one of the spinoffs of the Batman animated series. And that book is like gone insane in value. In fact, I know DC actually did a reprint of that book that was for a dollar just for that very reason, because the original version has become so inaccessible to collectors and she's such a popular character and people do want to know her actual first appearance, right? In comics, even though her very first appearance was actually in the show. She was created for the show, not for the comic books. So that's, I think, a good example of one that's endured and will continue to endure and is like a great investment pick. I do think we're going to see some sort of a DC bump, you know, as these characters come out, you know, on different platforms, whether they be a series. You know, I think even CW can give them somewhat of a bump. You know what I mean? As far as it just puts these things in the public consciousness, and it just makes people more aware, and it makes them kind of want these things a little bit more, just because there's a TV show or a movie out or something like that. Oh, and I did want to acknowledge Jane's in the house. She said hey to us. So hey, Jane, good to see you.
Hi, Mom. Yeah, the thing that's really cool, again, that I like about this pick is when you start talking about a lot of the main characters that are featured in Suicide Squad, that are going to be in Suicide Squad 2, most of those characters, their first appearances, they're kind of out of range. You just mentioned Harley Quinn. You know, Harley Quinn's first, way out of range. Deadshot, right. Way out of range. You know, Peacemaker now, because of all the excitement, way out of range. However, King Shark is one of those characters I think that people could really like, and he actually could, I think, break kind of big. Pardon the pun. We'll have to see what happens, how he comes across. But if James Gunn can do with King Shark what he did with Rocket, for example, and actually give us a really interesting, lovable monster kind of a character who's kind of like not too super kid friendly. Like kind of like what they did with Rocket, but still have it play to a larger audience. I think King Shark's one of those characters that'd be kind of interesting that might be able to stick around for a little bit longer than we might actually initially suspect. And again, the other thing I like about it too, his cameo and his first appearance, you know, they're not too terribly expensive. And I do honestly believe if you have an LCS, I really think that there might be copies of Superboy number 9 and 0 in 25-cent bins, in dollar bins, in 50-cent bins. If you're willing to invest the time into looking for them. I mean, I really honestly do believe that. So that's why these are our comic picks for this evening.
David Motz has some interesting points here, so let's address him. He says, if it has the DC Universe logo on the cover, it goes for more. He says, true. I see a copy on eBay for $200. Do you know much about that history, Dave, and why that is?
Yes, it's very true. This one here, this is a newsstand. You can tell it's a newsstand because it has a barcode.
Yeah, I was going to say that. That's the thing. You know, that's the thing that sticks out to me now as we've been doing this more and I'm learning more. I'm like, okay, that one's got a barcode. So that means that that's a specific kind of a print, that that's not the one that went to your local comic book store, right? So,
right. So typically the newsstand print runs are believed to be less than the actual basically direct market or the in comic book store print runs. Along those lines, they did actually reprint a lot of these books, and they would put them into like the little three packs and sell them at retail, like in places like Walmart's and such and so on and so forth. Now the deal with those actually have a DC Universe logo where that barcode is. So if it has the DC Universe logo, those are considered to be the rarest, because that was their special for those, and that print run is believed to be the least of the three. So your newsstand is considered to be more rare than your direct market, and something like that with the DC Universe is considered to be not scarce, but definitely there's less copies of that out in the wild, as it were. So definitely if you have one of those or you find one of those, you definitely want to hold on to it. And those are the ones, ideally, that if it's in really good condition, you know, in terms of the condition of the book, those are definitely the ones that you might want to consider actually having graded. But again, we're primarily going to talk about raw books and raw cards actually here on the show, primarily because there's so much difficulty with getting graded. I was going to talk about this more in the trading card segment, but for example, Beckett has now suspended all submissions for trading cards.
Oh, geez.
Gotta love that, except for the super expensive Cadillac Blend. All of it's been suspended. It was buried in a press release for the national show coming up, which I thought was hilarious. And a lot of people have been talking about this. So, you know, right now you can't submit to PSA. You can't submit to Beckett. It's just, it's insane. It's insane what's going on. So we're going to, on this show, for the foreseeable future, we're going to primarily be talking about raw cards and raw comics, because it seems like getting things graded is a problem, is a real problem.
Hey, morning cartoons. It's good to see you again. I agree with you. That's wild. That's terrible. I can't believe Beckett's doing that. But morning cartoons also adds, PSA is doing walk-ups at a card show in Chicago. Shows That's are cool. coming back. Shows are coming back. And I definitely have my eye on that, whether the possibility that some of the local shows here in Arizona might be coming back anytime soon. Because if they did have some grading people there, I think they would kill it. I think they would absolutely kill it, because I think there's such a demand. There's such a pent-up demand for it right now. Hey, any of you guys, local guys that are organizing conventions, you got to look into this. Whether it's video games, you know, or comics or trading cards or all of the above. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, you're going to get a great amount of people if you offer grading, because it's much more accessible, right? You know, they usually have some sort of right. limit, I think, but it's much more accessible. You get a ticket or whatever you're in, you can at least get a few pieces graded at the show, right? That's the idea.
Right.
And it, yeah, I agree. Morning Cartoons, he says, can you imagine how nuts that will be in Chicago? How nuts that's going to be in Chicago. The event is Comic Palooza, he says, in July. I'm really looking forward. Oh, he says that's in Houston. There's another one in Houston coming up called, I guess that's the Comic Palooza. Wow, that's pretty cool.
Planet Houston. Is this Planet Houston?
Planet Houston. There you go. So that's very cool. So it looks like Houston and Chicago are already gearing up. I wish Phoenix would do it. You know what I mean? But we'll see. You know, we'll see. You know, fingers crossed. You know, I really thought, should say fingers crossed, you can actually see it. I really thought when San Diego Comic-Con announced that they were going to be doing an event, which I believe theirs is going to be in October, I really thought that was going to open it up, you know, and all sorts of other local conventions were going to follow their lead, which they always do, right? They always follow whatever San Diego does. And this time it didn't happen. At least it's not happening locally, it doesn't seem like. You know,
there now around kind of around, there are some local events kind of popping up and happening here. For example, there, as far as I know, they are actually still going forward with actually a comic book based show, a pop culture based show actually happening in Prescott Valley, Arizona.
Okay.
At our event center here. And I, so far I believe that is going to continue to move forward. So David Motz, if you want to look into that, I believe that event is still happening. And I think it's either sponsored, co-sponsored by actually the actual library here to help encourage literacy. It's kind of an outgrowth of that Verde Valley show, Eric, that we did many moons ago.
Great show. Highly recommend it. Great little show. I really enjoyed it. That's kind of the way to me, like cons used to be. I mean that in all the best ways possible. It was a fun convention. And like you said, David Motz, I can't wait for the next con in Arizona. And David also mentioned, he says Phoenix will be in January. I hadn't heard that. Had you heard that, Dave, that they officially announced a con in January? I had not heard that.
I hadn't heard that. But again, I was copied on some messages about shows coming up. And to be honest with you, as it currently sits, I'm not looking at doing any shows. I am fully vaccinated. I don't know if my heart's swelling or if I'm just going to suddenly keel over and die at any moment. You believe all the hype? But anyhow, I don't want to get too far to that. We're getting in trouble. But anyhow, but I am fully vaccinated. And I am fully intending to maybe start doing some shows, for example, to promote the Retrogs Live. But as it currently sits, I'm not looking at doing any shows right now. Eric already knows I supposedly have a really amazing opportunity. I'm supposed to be getting a contract for here in a handful of days. And then I'll be able to announce that on the show. Hopefully it'll be something I think people will think is really cool, but I'm still waiting to get the contract. And because of that contract, I'm not going to be able to do any shows. I'm going to be way, way too busy. So that's the only reason because I thought I'd heard something about this, but I honestly have not been paying too much attention to what's happening with the shows. Cause I'm like, I can't go anyway, you know? Cause I've just got too much to be concerned with at the moment. But, I hadn't heard that, but that's kind of cool. If they're actually going to go ahead and do it in January, that's a fun show to plan for. So.
Yeah. David Mutt says I'm there. And you answered his question about, will you have a table? No. I myself, David Motz, might have a table. I'm going to have to look into that because I not only do I want to promote the show, I have a lot of collectibles I want to sell. So I might actually go there from that standpoint, and I might even do like a special broadcast or something like that. So, you know, stay tuned. And who knows, maybe David could just stop by or something like that.
That's what I was about to say. I might be able to do a day. And if I was to go out and do a day, you know, to promote the show, like I'd sketch for people for free. You know what I mean? Like
you answered
like
his next question.
Do it up. There you go.
David Mott says, darn, I was hoping to get a sketch from you. So how about this, David and David Motz? Because we got two Davids right now. How about this? So if I get a table, you know, and I can get Dave to stop by, we'll definitely let you folks know, you know, and that might be an incentive for folks to watch the show because only you will know when Dave will be at my table, that kind of a thing. Maybe that's we could do true. Something with that. That'd be kind of fun.
And,
to do something like
and,
that.
And here's the crazy thing. If the thing I'm working on, I'm waiting on the contract for comes through, I'm suddenly going to be in a lot more demand. It's going to be really interesting to see how people react. If this all happens and you guys hear about what I'm going to be working on, it's going to be insane. So,
again, fingers crossed.
But again, I can't say yet, but I'm really hoping it goes through. All right.
No, so, Jane also, we're still talking about conventions because I do like this. This is fun. Jane mentions there is a Comic-Con. There was a Comic-Con last week. No, there is a Comic-Con last week of June in Jackson. That's Mississippi, right?
Mississippi. Yeah.
So it's happening. It's definitely happening in other places. I just wish they would get their act together here in Arizona. I did mention on the air, I was really disappointed that Game On was not doing an event in August. They traditionally do their event in August. And I thought for sure they were going to do it. And I don't know what's going on there. I know they made an official announcement as to why and stuff, but still I'm kind of like, really? You know, I the only thing I can really think is Phoenix Convention Center is putting some really insane regs on them because I know the American Legion is doing their national convention in Phoenix this year. And I believe it's this month or next month. It's either June or July. It's one of the J's. And I know that's a big event. It's a huge event. And the only thing I can think of is that Phoenix Convention Center is putting some really strenuous guidelines out there right now, maybe with like the temperature checks and things like that. I don't know. I'm speculating. But I think it's crazy that they're going to have this huge national convention in June or July, and they can't have this much smaller convention in August, because Game On is a decent sized convention, but it's not going to be as big as the American Legion's national convention. You know, come on. So it's like, I don't know what's going on there. There's something going on there that's fishy in my mind at the Phoenix Convention Center. I don't know if Mesa is a better alternative. A lot of the conventions, actually, including Game On and Phoenix Comic Con, at one point were at the Mesa Convention Center and outgrew it. You know, I don't know if it's any easier with them, because I think that's actually a pretty nice venue. You know, I know you've had some experience there as well, Dave, and I actually feel that is a decent alternative. It's nowhere near the size of Phoenix, but it is a decent alternative if you want to have like a smaller event and just do something, you know? So who knows?
Yeah. If we ever had the numbers here for the Rich Rugs Live to support doing a show and bringing out guests and everything, I'd love to do a show in Mesa again. I think that would be a lot of fun. That's probably still one of my favorite venues actually for a convention is Mesa, especially like in the fall. It was always so nice out there. So for sure.
And also there's the convenience of the hotel.
Yeah,
there's no walk at all. It's not even across the street. It's basically the same campus. It's the same campus where the hotel is. And that's another nice thing about that venue. And Morning Cartoons is sending you some good vibes. Says he hopes it all happens, Dave. So.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Appreciate it.
And Morning Cartoons, we're glad to see you back again. We're glad to see you back again. We don't get a lot of Twitch love on here. So it's nice to see a little bit of Twitch love every once in a while.
So talking about Morning Cartoons, let's go ahead and talk about some cards. Okay. So, so for tonight's show, this is going to be interesting, everybody, because I had to do a lot of deep dive and research to get into this. Okay, so I'm primarily going to recommend the 1990 Marvel Impel, the Daredevil and the Punisher card. But in order to get there, we got to lead up to that. So I know the last show, because I've been kind of shortcutting some of what I'm calling the first appearance of the characters on some of the trading cards, just because to me, just because a character's been printed on a card, it doesn't immediately make it a rookie card to me. Okay. It just doesn't. Okay. Just to be clear, the way I define a rookie card is that it needs to have a little profile picture on the back. It has to have some stats, you know, little biographical information. That's
like
what
a baseball card,
of.
Right? Like a baseball card. Cause that's where the term comes from. The rookie card. Let's face it. Right. That's why we even use that term. So it comes from sports cards, right?
But some people have been calling me out in the last couple of shows, taking me to task over the fact that there's a card that came out first. So I'm going to now, along those lines, there is now in my mind on here on this show, when we talk about it, we're going to set a precedent. Okay. A precedent for us for the Retro Oaks Live moving forward. There is going to be a first appearance card. Okay. And then there's going to be an actual rookie card. That's how we're going to talk about it here on the Retro Oaks Live. So, talking about first appearances, okay. First,
you mean
appearance.
Before Impel? As
that's
morning
exactly
cartoon
right.
Sales?
That's
you
exactly
mean
right,
before
yes.
Impel?
That's exactly right. So, talking about Daredevil, we are going to start talking about Daredevil. Daredevil's first card is going to be one of the cards in the 1966 Donruss Marvel Superheroes trading card set. I've got two of the cards pictured here. These are two of the cards actually from the 66. Donruss Marvel set. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know that much about these cards until I think our first or second show when someone actually mentioned it in the comments section, actually. And so I went out and have been looking into these cards. Now, here's the thing that's interesting about the 1966 Donruss Marvel cards. The prices are all over the place. You can sometimes get one of these individual cards raw for as little as $5. And it can go as high as $50, okay? It really depends upon the condition of the card, okay? Now, it's hard for me to tell you which one of these Donruss Marvel Daredevil cards might be considered his first appearance, because I was having a hard time determining what the numbering is on these cards or if these cards even have numbering, okay? But the thing that is interesting about the cards, which is kind of fun and I kind of don't like about these cards, is they're kind of jokey. So you see the one here where Daredevil's jumping out of the window, and the little word balloon says he still thinks he's in the circus. Okay. And the other one there, but looks like Daredevil, you know, squaring off against the Hulk, he says, but Halloween is next week. Okay. So it doesn't make the cards any less appealing to me because I think they're really neat. But your first appearance of Daredevil on an actual physical trading card is going to be one of these 1966 Donruss cards. And like I said, without...
Now, Dave, I do need to point out, because I'm just looking at the what the cards say. It says that there's 28 Daredevil cards are numbered 23 to 33, and you have number 23 pictured. So I would guess that is actually the first appearance of Daredevil, just based on what it says here. Because it says collect all 66 cards. And it says,
I didn't even read that.
Daredevil cards are number 23 to 33. That. So I just thought that's cool because that wasn't intentional, but we should note it that is the first appearance of Daredevil right there.
Well, there you go, everybody. I'll be honest, I thought that was just legal stuff at the bottom. I didn't even read that. God, it's amazing how oblivious I can be to some things.
No, I think it's amazing that you did that without realizing you did that. That's what I think is amazing. So
so anyhow, there everybody. There is your 1966, Donruss Marvel Daredevil. That is going to be your first appearance of Daredevil on a trading card right there on the screen by luck and happenstance. It would just happen to happen. I would say that, can you tell I'm a blonde? But obviously my hair is completely white, so obviously I'm not a blonde. But never have been anyway. But that's going to be your first appearance of Daredevil on a trading card. Okay. Now you're in my mind anyway. Well, let's get your reaction. What do you think about these cards here, Eric? Just real quick.
Well, they're not bad, but they do lack a lot of color, right? I mean, that's the first thing that comes out of my my head, having never even seen these cards, and I don't have any of these in my collection. And I'm not familiar with these cards at all. The first thing that I feel is like, man, there's a real lack of color on these cards. So some people might like that. Some people might not. I tend to be more on the side of not.
Yeah, I, like I said, they're interesting cards. And I am going to try and see if I can get my hands on a couple of these cards. Just because I think they're kind of neat and interesting. And like I said, I'd never heard about these cards until we had someone in the comments section of one of our Marvel Impel videos actually mentioned them. I had no idea that these cards had even existed. They are kind of cool.
Morning Cartoons had a comment. He said, not as much of a profile like most cards. That's true. I agree with that.
And so along those lines, let us segue, shall we? So this, in my mind, this is going to be your Daredevil rookie card in my mind. And the reason being is we get a really nice shot of Daredevil on the front. It's more like a sports card, a baseball card, essentially. I did not put the back on here, but when you see the back of the card, we have a profile picture. We have biographical information. We have some, data and stats and everything for actually Daredevil. So to me, this is much more of a rookie card. So this is card number 4 from the 1990 Impel Marvel comic line, and this is Daredevil. In my mind, this is your Daredevil rookie card. Now, this card, again, raw, we're going to focus on raw. You can get this card anywhere from $5 to about $10-$15. As always, we're going to say if you're going to purchase these cards, pay attention to the corners. You want to make sure the corners are really crisp and sharp. I like to say like they could cut you. All right. That's what you want to see. You want to make sure that the card is very, very well centered, and make sure it's got good color reproduction. It doesn't look washed out. Make sure the whites are really bright. The black is really dark and rich. You just want to make sure that it doesn't seem like it's been like in the sun for any extended period of time. But this, to me, this is your Daredevil rookie card. And I wanted to focus on Daredevil for this evening because there is a lot of rumors going around that Charlie Cox will be playing Daredevil in the next Spider-Man movie. But none of that's been confirmed. I don't know why anybody still follows these people who say they have insider information. They know when these trailers are dropping. I don't know why anyone is still listening to these people, because when that trailer's supposed to come out 2 days ago or something now. Anyhow, I'm just going to put that out there. It's probably a little cold to say, but just saying. But if Daredevil shows up in the movie, this would be a fun card to have. You get one of those 1966 Donruss cards. You get this one. You get them graded in slabs, 10 years from now when they're accepting cards again. It's kind of cool. You got some really neat Daredevil collectibles and memorabilia. You got some fun things maybe to hold on. Maybe flip down the road for a couple bucks. If the trading card thing continues to you know, be a thing, which I think it will be, but that's just my humble opinion. What do you think about this card, Eric?
Well, I almost immediately think when it comes to condition, what Morning Cartoon says, which is the centering makes me crazy on these. And that's what I constantly hear from collectors who own these cards, which I do not own any Marvel Impulse cards myself right now. But I hear that all the time, is that the centering is a huge issue on these cards. And that's what makes the quality vary, you know, intensely. And Morning Cartoons also mentioned that he had just gifted his Impulse Daredevil. And I'm curious, Morning Cartoons, was the centering good on that one you gifted? Or did you gift one that you thought wasn't a good card? I'd be curious to know that. You don't have to tell us if you don't want to, by the way. I'm just kind of curious because you did make that comment. But I do, in contrast to the other cards we were looking at, Morning Cartoon says, okay, so it wasn't perfect. I got you, man. I got you. I understand. I totally understand. But the thing is that contrasting this to the quote unquote first appearance cards, I think these look a lot better. And this is from someone who doesn't have either one of them, right? I don't actively collect either one of them. So just from an aesthetic standpoint, and as a fan, as someone who appreciates the character, I think these cards look better than the other ones, you know? So,
you know, the thing that's interesting about these cards too, is I haven't really researched it to figure out who might've actually been the artist who worked on these cards, but this Daredevil card in particular really looks like Mark Bagley's work back during the time when he was working on New Warriors. I mean, I could be totally wrong, but it really, really looks like his work. And I know that Paul Mounts colored all of these cards, but that's something I'm always meaning to research, like go back and research and figure out who in the hell actually drew these cards. You know what I mean? But because they're going to be classics. That's the thing, that this card, even though the 66 Don Russ predates it and it is your first appearance, this is going to be the card that people are going to continue to talk about, own, and hold on to because it's just classic. Plus, when you consider the time period in which this came out, you know, the 90s was such an important time for so many of us who were, you know, diehard comic book collectors in those days. And collecting and trading these cards, man, that was like a big thing back then. It was a big thing back then. So, irregardless, this is going to be an important card for a lot of people. And I do feel like the 90 Marvel Impel line is going to go down as a true classic. So,
yeah, I think that's the way that it's going as well. But Morning Cartoons mentions collectors that want it all will eventually have to make their way to the cards you mentioned. I think he's talking about the first appearance cards. I think that that's is true. Becoming more of a thing. As Dave mentioned, that's that was true. Something that we were, quote unquote, you know, called out on one of our previous episodes because someone was like, well, that's not the first appearance. And by the way, if you're listening right now, I'm not trying to mock you like that. I'm just saying that's what you said. Okay.
Yes, he is. Yes, he you is. Know?
So it's like, we understand that, you know, and the thing is, even that one, you specifically referenced the comic images cards, which is he was talking about the Marvel ones. You were talking about the G.I. Joe ones. So it's like, come on, right, guys. At some point, you guys are just splitting hairs now because what you're really just talking about is your preference and what you think is the card to collect. And that is something that's debatable, right? Because for somebody, there might be their card to collect might be a card from the 2000s. Who knows? They might think the Marvel Impulse cards are way overstocked. There are people that say that, right? That it's all hype. There's way more of these cards out there than people realize, and they are not a good investment. There are all sorts of perspectives out there. So for that person, right, it might be a completely different card that they might be saying, hey, well, this is one that you might want to look to, you know, as like a long-term investment, right? Because there's the way I see it, you know, with collecting and with this show, there's basically three ways we come about it, right? There's the speculative stuff, which is generally a quick flip. And quick flip is different to everybody. It might be you want to flip it tomorrow and you want to throw this thing on eBay tomorrow and double your money. And that can happen with some of the stuff that's out in stores right now. You can literally put it on eBay and double your money tomorrow if you find it in store for a certain price, right? That's that speculative stuff. That's that quick flip, making that quick money, right? Then there's investments, right? People buy things because it's like the first appearance of Batman. That's always going to be worth money. That's like buying gold, right? At this point, that's like buying silver or gold. At this point, it's a commodity. It's always going to hold some value and it's always going to be valuable until the end of civilization. I mean, that's basically what we're talking about there. That's like the creme of the creme. First appearance of Superman, first appearance of Batman. Then there's the stuff that you like. You just like it, right? You think it's cool. You think it's a good story from a comic book. You think it's a good image, you know, like this one. You think this is a better image than the other one. The other one I saw, hey, I think this one's better than the other one we saw on this show. I just like it. I think it's nice. I enjoy it, right? So there's always those three different ways of looking at collecting. And I think they also mix with each other, right? Because you might have something you love, but it's also very valuable, right? You know, or you might have something you love that's worth nothing, right? So, I mean, that's the way collecting goes, right?
And along those lines, talking about those G.I. Joe comic images cards, the irony of that is I've been doing some additional research into that. And it turns out, I think it's either 1986 or 88, there's actually a Milton Bradley G.I. Joe set that actually predates all of that. That actually really? uses the actual card back artwork, you know, the super classic images with the explosions behind it. That definitely is not only one, but it's a better looking card, but number two, it's just classic in the nature of what it is. So I'm looking into researching and trying to see if I can get my hands on some of those, because I didn't even know those existed until just recently. So, and technically, not to split hairs here, but that would be actually your first appearance of
that would actually be your first Shadow.
There you go.
There you go. Sometimes that's the way it goes too, right? Because there's also a lot of lines out there. Well, there's also a lot of lines out there that were failures, right? Or just weren't that popular. And, you know, that happens as well. You know, Dave Motz mentions that he does quit flips because that helps him buy more comics and it supports his habit.
Yeah,
I definitely hear that. And also we had David Motz had an earlier comment where he had some of that, that rumor mill stuff that we were talking about, right? You heard it here first on the Retro Rogues Live. I hear Ben Affleck is going to play Daredevil. You heard it here first. You heard it here first in the Retro Rogues Live from David Motz, giving us that rumor mill, giving us that inside knowledge of Hollywood. Ben Affleck is going to play Daredevil. You heard it here first, folks.
he's going to, if he's still got his Batman physique, that's going to be one swole Daredevil. That's all I'm going to say. All right. Very cool. That would be hilarious if that actually comes to pass. All right. So, let's go ahead and go to our next card here real quick.
Morning Cartoons, you're not alone. There's a lot of people that were disappointed in the Ben Affleck Daredevil. You are not alone in that Morning Cartoons.
Yeah, you know, think about the Ben Affleck
You said you weren't too mad. I read that wrong. It says, yo, I wasn't too mad at that Ben Daredevil. So both perspectives are out there. Some people liked him. Some people hated him. I don't think there's a lot of in between.
I quite like the director's cut version of Daredevil. It's far superior to theatrical, in my humble opinion. All right, so we're going to talk about
I have heard that before, and I haven't seen it, but I have heard that.
I feel like it's quite better. All right, so our next card we're going to talk about, we're going to be talking about the Punisher. Okay, now, as far as I can tell, here we go, okay? There is a lot of Punisher cards out there, everybody. A lot of Punisher cards that predate the 1990 Marvel Impel line. A lot of cards, okay? But as with I had mentioned with Blade, okay, I really feel like, in all honesty, this Marvel sticker is going to be your first appearance of a Punisher kind of on a card. It is technically a sticker, but I do feel like this kind of qualifies, okay? So this is going to be your first appearance of Punisher. This is from 1976. This is actually from Topps. This is the Punisher. It's the same thing. We got this little, oh boy, I win the Cupid doll. You know, this kind of quippy, funny thing, right? So anyhow, and this is an image. This looks like a classic image from how the Punisher looked when he first appeared in Spider-Man. You know, it fits with 1976. The Punisher would have been relatively still kind of new. Okay. This, as far as I could tell, this is your first appearance. But again, a lot of these comic image cards, the stuff in the Tops and whatever, it's the same thing. It doesn't really fit, in my mind, the definition of a rookie card. Now, this one right here, it varies just like with all the early Marvel stuff. You might be able to get it to $5 or $10, or you might be paying $50, $60, $100. It depends upon the condition. It depends upon who you get it from, okay? And again, we're talking about raw stickers. We're talking about raw cards. But this is going to be, as far as I could tell, this is going to be your first appearance of the Punisher in a trading card line. Even though it's a sticker, we're going to count it this time. Kind of like we did with Blade. I talked about that, you know, Blade's first appearance. I still feel like is that Impel card. But he does have a sticker that predates it. So in this case, I said, okay, everybody. All right, y'all going to call me out? here you go. Here's your sticker. So this is probably your first appearance of Punisher. What do you think about this selection here, Eric?
I do like this one. I do like it. I like the snarky comment, you know. Oh, boy, I win the Cupid doll, you know. That's very Punisher to me. So I like it. I actually like it. I do think it's interesting that it's a sticker, but then again, so are Garbage Pail Kids, right? And they're considered trading cards.
So that's true. And
I do collect those, and I do have some of those. I've shown them on the air. So,
And that's the thing, is that it kind of falls into a weird nebulous realm, right? But I felt like, you know what, let's go ahead. We'll call it what it is. We'll say this is the first appearance. This is the first appearance, as far as I can tell. There may be something out there I don't know about. But as far as I could tell, this is your first appearance of the Punisher kind of in a trading card line, even though it's a sticker. And this is from 1976, Topps. This is the Punisher. Now,
Morning Cartoons makes an interesting point that I hadn't heard before, which is that soccer culture favors stickers to cards. I did not know that.
Interesting. I didn't know that either. But for my mind, this is going to be your Punisher rookie card, everybody. Okay, so this is 1990 Marvel Impel. This is card number 47. I am not picking the Punisher van. I know a lot of people keep talking about the Punisher van card because it comes before the Punisher, because I think it's card 44 or something like that. But I'm sorry, that's not the Punisher. That's his van. So we're going to talk about the actual Punisher, shall we? All right, so this, in my mind, is your Punisher rookie card. And again, the reason I feel like it's your rookie card is because it fits the definition in terms of when we think about baseball cards or sports cards. You got a profile picture on the back, got some biographical information, some stats, some data, right? I feel like that's what qualifies this. So anyhow, this is now this one, too, is just like all the others. You could get it for $5 or up. It depends upon the condition of the card. Again, make sure those corners are nice, sharp, and crisp. You know, make sure it's got good color reproduction, doesn't look like it's washed out. But this is going to be your pick. I really feel like that the Daredevil card that we showed earlier and this Punisher card, I do feel like these are really interesting pieces to have in your collection. No rumors so far. I mean, I've heard that Jon Bernthal will be returning as the Punisher in some form, potentially in the MCU moving forward, but we don't really have that confirmed as of yet, as far as I know. But anyhow, here you go. Here's your Punisher rookie card. What do you think about this selection, Eric?
I like it. I like it. Do you have any idea what it goes for? Ungraded?
Ungraded, like I said, you could get a copy anywhere from $5 to $7. Most kind of fall within that range. But if someone actually has one that looks like that it is really well centered, that's got good, you know, if they're trying to sell it to you as a PSA 9, PSA 10, even though it's not graded, I mean, you're looking at anywhere $30 to $50. But if you're willing to put $50 into that card, you might as well just go ahead and, you know, wait out an auction and see if you could pick it up for somewhere between $50 to $75 and actually get one that's already graded, you know, at that point. Now, something that's worth mentioning, eBay did change their policy actually regarding trading cards in terms of how that process works. So if someone starts to buy a card and they decide that they don't want to get the card anymore, and they basically want out of the auction, the policy has changed. So where now basically you have to do is you have to message the seller and say, hey, I can't do this right now, or I've changed my mind or whatever. And it's actually at the seller's discretion right now to determine whether or not to basically refund your money and end the auction. So you want to definitely look at your policies if you're purchasing cards on eBay, because the seller and buyer stuff has actually changed on eBay specifically in relation to trading cards, and that would apply to non-sports cards such as the Marvel cards as well.
Gotcha.
All right. Very cool. I think that's going to do it for the comics and the card selections, everybody. So let's go ahead and go on. Now, Eric, my understanding is you have something really cool for this evening. I think you're going to maybe be unboxing something.
That's correct. So this is new ground for me. I've never done a live unboxing in you know, ever. So this will be kind of different. I do want to make sure it's a true unboxing. So I'm going to go ahead and put the camera on me for a second here. So I have talked about this. I did order the Mandalorian figures for the retro line from Entertainment Earth. So you can see their big box here. I did kind of think it was neat how they have this stuff here on the side. It says, who's ready for an unboxing? So many toys, so much fun. Thank you. The wait is over. Minty fresh. And it goes on and on and on. Cheers, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's kind of fun that they do that. I can't remember if I've ever ordered anything from Entertainment Earth before. I think you have, right, Dave? You've ordered some stuff from Entertainment Earth before, haven't you?
I have ordered so much stuff from Entertainment Earth over the years. It's not funny.
And just so you see, this is a true unboxing. I actually got the knife out because I wanted to make sure people knew I did not take a sneak peek at all. This is going to be a true reaction. I might be really happy. I might be really sad because who knows what the quality of the figures are going to be or if they missed a figure or any of that stuff. You're going to get both the joy and the, you know, the triumph, the tragedy, the whole thing here on the Retro Rogues Live. First ever unboxing I think we've ever done on this show. We've both shown things from our collections, but we've never, I think, done an actual live unboxing before. So looks like I got my little receipt there. People might be curious about the packing materials. These are action figures, so it looks like they did pack this quite a bit, which you would expect no less from a place like Entertainment Earth that basically markets towards the, I would say, the adult collector. I think I hit my mic there. Hopefully I didn't mess up any of the sound or anything. Oh, and look what we have here. Makes me wish I had already opened this, but this is why we're live. There's another box. Now this box is directly from Hasbro.
All right,
that's
very
interesting.
Cool.
So people might be wondering about that. In fact, I was wondering about that. So this is directly from Hasbro, and it says action figures, eight pieces, Star Wars Season 3, retro figures. Season 3. That's kind of weird. What maybe that obviously that S3 means something different than I think it does. I don't think that word means what you think it means. As they would say, right? Princess Bride reference.
Right.
So I think that's kind of neat, actually. Right off the bat, that kind of makes me a little happy that I'm getting a box direct from the manufacturer. I like that.
It's inconceivable.
I think most collectors would like that. What's that? It's inconceivable.
It's inconceivable.
Right? All right. So there, we can see the figures all packaged in there. All right. So I'll just kind of randomly start bringing them out. I don't know which one is which as I'm bringing them out, but here's the first one that I got. This is the Grief Karga. I always mess up his nickname. That's the Carl Weathers Apollo's figure. And as you can see, it's cool. Got the retro styling, trying to avoid some of the glare. And by the way, one of the things I know a lot of people dislike is that frame is intentional. It's meant to make it look like it's a vintage figure. When it's not, right? Because there is no such thing as a vintage figure. These are brand new figures. Like I'm showing these straight out of the box. And I know some people like this and some people don't. Do you have any opinions on that? The intentional frame, Dave? Because I know some people really hate that.
Yeah, let me put it this way. The thing that's nice about the intentional fraying is if it's genuinely damaged, it's not obvious.
There you go. So this is the Moff Gideon. This is a figure I really wanted. He's one of the characters I really enjoyed on the show.
Yeah.
And what I really like, and it might be hard to see, is he's got that vinyl cape. So he really is meant to have that retro styling. And also one thing I'm noticing, I know some people have talked about some of these retro figures. They have a sticker here. And this isn't a sticker. This is part of the packaging. No, it is a sticker. I'm sorry. It is a sticker. Okay, so it is a sticker. At first, I thought it wasn't because it was it's so ingrained. But this is a sticker. And I know this is another thing some people really dislike. And I'm curious what people think, because I know there are people that really dislike the fact that they put stickers on these things, especially, I guess, as an adult collector.
I'm going to say I'm not digging the sticker too much just because, I feel like it's covering up too much of the photo.
Now, for a lot of people, this is one that I think everybody wants. Baby Yoda is very hot right now, no matter what configuration he comes in. And this is the Baby Yoda version for the Mandalorian, the child, as they call him officially on this. They didn't go with Grogu. That's interesting. So they call him the child. I still call him Baby Yoda. This may be going to one of my kids. I'll just say that right now, because I am going to let my kids choose one if they want. I do that. I like to share my collecting with my kids. I'm not necessarily a completist. Oh, this is one that this is Quill. I like Quill a lot.
Yeah.
I'm glad to have this one in my collection. Again, that might be one of my kids want, though, too. But I'm glad to have this one in my collection. He was a very cool character, in my opinion. Spoiler alert, rest in peace, Quill, right? Rest in peace, Quill. Yeah. But that's a figure I really like. One thing I will say that some people have commented on, and I can see it as I'm stacking my figures off the side. You know, I'm a collector. I'm trying to stack them so like they're on top of each other and I'm not bending the cards. Hard to do that with this one because the blister pack is so different than the other ones. So I kind of had to put him off to the side and put him on the top or something because he won't stack right with the other figures. Oh, here's another one I really was looking forward to. IG-11.
That's cool.
I said it on our review. By the way, we have reviewed both seasons of The Mandalorian on this show. We have reviewed both seasons. This was the character that I really enjoyed in the first season. I thought this one had the most character development. This droid had the most character development of any character on The Mandalorian, in my opinion. I really feel that he had the most character development. And I really, really love this figure because this is a character that I really, really enjoyed on the show. So I'm glad to have that one in my collection for sure. Really, really cool character. Droids are always going to be a cool thing. Well, here it is. It's early. I was taking them out randomly. This is why I even bought this whole thing. I got my Cara Dune.
There you go. Very cool.
For those of you that don't know, my intention was just to buy the Cara Dune for my personal collection because I've been looking for anything Cara Dune. I do believe these are going to go up. I do believe these are not just speculative. I believe these are a good investment. I think people will be wanting Cara Dune stuff for a long time, and the supply is just not going to be there. So this is going to be something where you're going to have a real supply issue. It's not just hype. There is a real supply issue with this stuff. And as an example, the only way I could find to get this figure was to order the entire collection. I could not find this figure alone anywhere. I do know that they have appeared in stores. This entire line has been in stores for about a month, which, by the way, I know some collectors were very frustrated by that because they, like me, were waiting patiently for their pre-order, and people were seeing these things in stores already, and they were like, wait a second, I still don't have my stuff. But here it is. This is the whole reason I bought this line. This is mine. This will not go to any of my kids. This will be mine. Just so you know, that will be mine. It's the reason I bought this. It's the whole reason I bought this. And this here, for a lot of you, this is the one you'd want, right? This is the Mandalorian himself.
Yeah, very cool.
And it does say the Mandalorian. Again, like the Moff Gideon character, he has that vinyl cape, very much that retro styling from the classic Kenner. And these are marked Kenner. I like that. I like that a lot, actually, that they're called Kenner. So I dig that. And that's your Mandalorian figure. Obviously very, very Boba Fettish and meant to be Boba Fettish because Boba Fett actually came out. So we got one figure left. So we got one figure left, and here it is. Oh, you get an extra Mandalorian. I didn't know they were going to do that. So for anybody wondering, there are, what, seven figures in the line? Because I was wondering that because it says eight pieces, right? And there are only seven figures in the line. So we've talked about this, right, Dave? We talked about this on a recent episode, the duplicates that you get in these boxes. Because, again, this is a Hasbro box straight from the manufacturer. Eight pieces. There are only seven figures in the series. So if you're wondering who the most common figure is, this is it, which makes sense. It's the Mandalorian. That's the figure that's going to be the most common. For you that are collecting out there, that is something to keep in mind, that this is the most common figure because it is they put two of them in a box, whereas the other figures only get one. So you get that little bit of, I guess, insider knowledge, if you will, that if you are looking at that, because we've talked about the notorious issue with many toy manufacturers where they were overpackage a specific figure. We talked about the Riker debacle of the Galoob figures. I mean, that's a famous story if you're a Star Trek fan. The Riker Galoobs were just, it was something ridiculous. Like they were four to a box of 10 or something. It was like crazy, you know? And so in this one, you can see the most common figure apparently is the Mandalorian. There are two in every eight-piece pack.
I feel like we should coin the expression the Riker paradox.
The Riker paradox. I like that. I like that a lot because I think that for a lot of people that know, they'll get the reference. And if they don't know, it's a fun story. It's a fun story. Yeah. And I experienced it. I remember going into my local toy store, which was actually Lionel Toys. I don't know if everybody remembers that. They were a big competitor of Toys R Us. And they had a wall almost filled with Riker figures. And you couldn't find anybody else. I mean, you could occasionally. I mean, I did get other figures, but it was just like the amount of Rikers was insane. And talk about peg warmers. I mean, those were like the classic peg warmers for the longest time. And there's this whole story about how they were given away at conventions and made Jonathan Frakes feel like that tall, even smaller than the figure. garbage because they were giving away his figures like nobody wanted it.
See, the toy store I remember a lot when I was a kid was actually Children's Palace. I remember always being excited to go in there when I was a kid. Of course, I grew up in the South, actually the Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee area. So,
and I grew up in Arizona, and in Arizona initially they did not have Toys R Us. Lionel was the big box toy store, and then Toys R Us basically put them out of business. True story. That's what happened out here. So,
the funny thing is though, when I bought my Constructicons, I had to actually search those out in order to find some place that was selling them, and the only place that was selling Constructicons was actually was it Service Master or something like that, or Service? I think it was called Service Master. I think I've got that wrong. It was really weird, but it was like a department store, but it wasn't like the kind of department store you would think of for like buying toys at or something. But that was the only place that had the Constructicons. I remember going in there and buying, you know, like a couple at a time until I had the complete set of the Constructicons. Kind of reminds me too, like I've talked about this before on the show here, that the only place I could actually get the Justice League comic books when I was a kid was actually a liquor store that was actually down from the library. None of that sounds right, but I would tell my parents I was going to go to the library, and then on the way to the library, I would buy my Justice League comic books at the liquor store because they had it on the display that was right inside the door, and I knew I wasn't supposed to be in there. But they would let me because I would walk in and I'd be kind of like peeking in because I wouldn't step all the way in. And then one of the people would acknowledge me. And I'd be like, I just want to buy that comic book right there. And they're like, okay, come on in. And I would go in and grab it and get it. And then I would run right out. That's the only place I could find Justice League comic books.
Yeah, so. That definitely doesn't sound like it all goes together. Now, David Motz, you had an answer to something that I was asking. I appreciate that. So when I was wondering what that number meant, that S3, because I was thinking, is that season 3? No, it's series 3. And now I realize what you're talking about, because the first series was New Hope figures. The second series was Empire figures. And the third series is not Return of the Jedi. They have not done a Return of the Jedi retro yet. They've done the Return of the Jedi vintage, which, by the way, some of these marketing terms are really confusing. I don't know what Hasbro's even thinking. Vintage versus retro. What does that even mean? I mean, it's kind of crazy. But there hasn't been a retro series for Return of the Jedi yet. So that's why Mandalorian is series 3. Thank you, David Motz, for catching that, because now that you say it, I know exactly what you're talking about. And it is kind of funny that you would think series 3 would be Return of the Jedi, but it's not, because they decided to do Mando before Return of the Jedi, if they even are going to do a Return of the Jedi retro series, which I don't know if that's planned or not. And then Morning Cartoons mentioned, it's like when they do it to guitars, laugh out loud. I don't know exactly what you were referencing, Morning Cartoons. If you want to give me just some clarification, we can definitely address your comment. And David Motz mentions, as far as toy stores growing up, he used to go to KB, and so did I, Dave, David Motz. I went to KB Toys a lot too, but it was a much smaller store than Lionel or Toys R Us. You know what I mean? So, and we had another one. I feel like we had another one besides KB as well. That was one that was like in the malls, but those were much smaller than like Lionel and Toys R Us were equivalent to each other. They were both like big box stores that were just toys. And then Jane says Service Merchandising. I think that was the store Dave found the Constructicons. Service Merchandising.
Yeah. And my mom would know, cause she's the one who drove me out there. So that wasn't a place I could get to on foot. So, but yeah, Service Merchandising. That sounds about right. I know a service something. That sounds about right. Service Merchandising. I just remember it was so weird because I primarily remember going in there for like washers and dryers and electronics. Like when, you know, my parents will be buying something like that. And they
had like Sears,
lawnmowers.
Right?
And, yeah, exactly.
Sears
exactly.
is like it's that. Sears like had all Sears. That stuff. But Sears also growing up had a great toy section and they had exclusives. Yeah. Sears had exclusives, including Star Wars exclusives that were only at Sears. You can't. In fact, some of that stuff is the most coveted stuff now because it was made in such limited qualities because they had a lot of Sears exclusives.
Do you remember? I think it was Sears. At least in the South, where I grew up, the Sears had a glass display, and they would put a lot of their high end like diecast collectibles. And I remember they used to have like several shelves. It seemed like of nothing but the Eagles from Space 1999, like different versions of the Eagle. Huh, yeah, when I was a kid, because I remembered like that when Star Wars had come out. They had like the metal diecast, like the Millennium Falcon. They had the Star Destroyer. They had the little Rebel blockade cruiser that would come out of the little like bay on the bottom of it. And they had those, but then they also had like a shelf or two, and it was a really nice glass display. And in that, they had several different variations of the Eagle from Space 1999. And then I still have, I think it's over there. I actually still have my Millennium Falcon that I got back then from cool. when I was a kid. But it's the die-cast one that has the plastic bottom. There's a little landing gear that comes out on it. I've had that since I was, like, I don't know, like a little kid. So,
yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, you don't see as much die-cast stuff anymore. Even as a kid, I think it was pretty rare, you know, to find a lot of die-cast versions of anything. So. It's kind of nice when they have that stuff, because that stuff is really meant to last, you know,
yeah.
All the plastic stuff that I mostly grew up with.
All right. So if we're good, let's go ahead and segue over to pop culture.
Sounds good. Do a little bit of pop culture news.
All right. So here in the pop culture news segment, we like to talk about anything we hope that you will find interesting, worthy of discussion that's happening in the world of pop culture. Use it something that catches Eric's mind or attention, or it catches mine. At the very least, we hope it's something you will find worthy of discussion. That's what we like to talk about here in the pop culture news. All right, so for tonight's show, I hate that Hollywood Jackson is not here tonight, because I'm actually talking about something that Hollywood Jackson actually recommended on, was it the Terminator show or the show before?
I think it was on our last episode when we reviewed the Terminator.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
He was actually talking about, I think it's Joe, how do you say his name again, Eric?
Satriani?
Yeah, he's a guitar player. And this is really bad. I know the name, but I don't know where I know the name from. Is that awful?
Oh, he's done so much stuff that's not necessarily awful, because he's one of those go-to guys. You know, a band has a problem and they call him in to fix the piece that's not working. True story. You know what I mean? So
yeah, he's one of
those go-to guys when if a band is having trouble on their album, call this guy and he'll come over and fix it. So
I recognize the name, and I know he's a legendary guitar player. I knew all that. And in addition to that, and I think Hollywood actually clarified it for us last episode, which I kind of sucks he's not here, because I think that back in the day that he had actually done either an album or a single release track that was actually about Silver Surfer. And I'd heard before that
he said it was an entire album.
That's right. And that's what I thought. But again, I hadn't had a chance to verify any of this. But anyhow, he has created a comic book called Crystal Planet, and they're taking pre-orders for it. And in addition to that too, they also have an action figure and some different things that they're doing. So, I went ahead and pulled this up for those of you who might be interested. This is over at Incendium, online, and it's kind of buried in this link. Eric, if I shared this link, do you think we'd be okay? Or do you think we'd get in trouble?
I don't think there's a problem with sharing it.
All right. Okay. All right. I'm going to put this into the chat everywhere for those of you who might be interested. So I just put the link out there for anyone who might want to follow this. All right. So anyhow, the book is called Crystal Planet. And the actual penciler on this is actually Richard Friend. I haven't talked to Richard Friend in a long time, but even though his name says Friend, I mean, I know Richard, we've run into each other on several occasions, but I wouldn't necessarily consider him a friend, but I would consider him a professional acquaintance anyway. Go ahead and click on this. It looks like most of the comics are about $20, but they are a limited quantity. It's a really nice looking cover. It says Crystal Planet number 1, Joe Satriani, first edition, limited edition comic book. So if you're interested, you definitely check out that link and see it. And the thing we like about this too, this is a independent production. This is an independent title. And this is kind of the things we're hoping to focus kind of more on. But issue number one, it says, "The Journal to Crystal Planet begins here. Experience a vivid space odyssey where Satchel Walker, a man out of time, finds himself caught between desperate factions as they battle for resources in the perilous orbit of a dying star. In a bold and brutal saga of sentient storms and wingsuit armies, it's music, and more importantly, the power of emotion that music can conjure, which could bring an end to the conflict, restore harmony to the time stream, and reveal Walker's true place in the universe." Looks like they're going to do 5 issues, and it's limited to about 1998 copies, so less than 2,000. It's got exclusive bonus content. It's got it looks like a foil accent. Cardstock cover, glossy pages, 48. Again, like I said, pencils by the great Richard Friend and credit by Joe Citroni, Ned Everett, script by Tony Lee, colors by Carlos Cabrera. Apologies if I'm saying it incorrectly. Letters by Jacob Baskell and editor Lexi Leon. Anyhow, my apologies if I'm saying his name incorrectly. It's not my intention. But you definitely check out the link. See if we can get the cover to blow up here. It's a really nice looking cover. I like the cover. I like their lettering too. It reminds me of Crystar. If anyone remembers Crystar from back in the day, I always loved Crystar. Fun toy line as well as a comic book series.
Hey, speaking of toys, do you mind also highlighting the action figure real quick just to blow them up?
Yeah, I can. The only problem is I have to bear with me, everybody, because I've got to do this in order to go back. I have to kind of do that. So here it is, the Joe Citroen and Crystal Planet. Action figure. Pull this up here. So we'll take a look here.
So if you ever wanted a Joe Satriani action figure, here you go.
Yeah, there you go.
As his comic book persona. I kind of relate to this because that's kind of like, in some ways, that's the idea for me of the base god, which is the avatar that I use. It's kind of that same idea because it isn't like bass. Like I'm not the fishing god. It's a bass guitar, you know, bass god, not bass god. So I kind of relate to this whole idea here. So I kind of like that. I think that's pretty cool. And I like how they kind of did their own. They found this other toy manufacturer apparently called Fig Biz, which of course reminds you of Toy Biz, right? And I'm guessing they make a lot of like limited print type of figures, because this is quite expensive for a single figure, but I'm sure that they don't make many of these. They are collectibles from the get-go immediately.
And then there's the back there, and it's just got the similar summary there as what I just read in relation to the comics. So very cool.
And I do want to emphasize once again that this was a suggestion from the Rogues Gallery, specifically from Hollywood Jackson. If you folks have suggestions, we definitely want to feature them on the show, and even more so something like this, because it is independent and we would like to showcase more independent stuff, whether it be film, movie, or collectibles.
Yeah, it's definitely something we want to get into. We cover a lot of the big studio stuff, and obviously the big two in terms of the comic book stuff. But we do want to focus independent productions, so we definitely, definitely recommend, if you know about something, you've heard about something, or if there's something you're liking or you're into, definitely tell us about it, because we'd definitely like to feature and talk about it here on the show.
Absolutely.
I just double-stated what Eric said, but there you go, just in case it wasn't 100% clear.
All right, so are we good for my pop culture?
Yeah, this is good for pop culture for me, at the very least, for sure. Do you have anything that you want to cover actually for pop culture?
Yeah. So I wanted to talk briefly. This is a Los Angeles Times article that just came out. This was trending on Twitter for a little bit, so you may have heard about this already, but this is fun because this is picture time. They just had their photographer go out, and this is the Marvel Superheroes Rock Disneyland Avengers Campus. And these are just photos. So for people that didn't know, which I was one of those people that didn't know, apparently, over in California Adventure at Disneyland, they made a Disneyland Avengers campus. And I didn't know about this, so I thought this was interesting. Apparently, this opens up officially on Friday. Although I would note, for those of you that are not aware, it opens up for Californians officially on Friday. If you live outside of California, you cannot go to Disneyland until June 15th. In fact, I was just talking to my daughter about this because she had some interest in going to Disneyland this year, this summer. But so for Californians, this opens up on Friday. For the media, it already opened up. Apparently, they got to do their preview. And then for the rest of us that don't live in California, June 15th, you can go check this out. So this very first thing, this is wild to me. So this is a Spider-Man robot. So this is a Spider-Man robot doing a backflip while performing at Web Slingers, which is a Spider-Man adventure during the media preview on the Adventures campus. Can you believe that's a robot, Dave? That's a robot. Isn't that cool?
Well, they were talking about, I think it was one, there was a special, I think on Disney Plus or something, they were talking about some of the things that they were doing. And I know that they were doing tests actually for a robot that would do the Spider-Man swing.
Right.
So I guess they got it all figured out and got it working apparently. So that's crazy.
Now this, I believe, is a model. This is not the robot. This is a model that's dressed up like Spider-Man, which, by the way, if you've ever been to some of those older conventions back when Marvel used to bring out their actual models, their official Marvel models, that was a lot of fun. I remember the Spider-Man in particular at San Diego Comic-Con was a lot of fun. So hopefully Disney's doing the same thing and they got a good person portraying Spider-Man, because that was a lot of fun at conventions back in the day. This is the robot again. So you can see the robot. You can see how high up he is. You can see the photographers on the ground, how the robot is. Definitely something I would be interested in checking out and seeing. This is also the robot, more close up. That's the Spider-Man robot that they have over at the Spider-Man Adventure at the Avengers campus. This again is the robot. Pretty cool, huh? So you got the robot and he's climbing down the wall here. And it's a Stark Motors advertisement, which is cool. Taking cars to new heights. But I do think that's wild that that's a robot. I mean, totally looks like a person. That's really cool. This is a Quinjet that's on top of the Avengers headquarters. You can see the Avengers headquarters and they have the Quinjet. Looks very realistic, very much like the movie. And I'll butcher the pronunciation, so you're going to have to help me with this one, Dave. What are the Wakandan warriors called?
The Dora Milaje.
There we go. So they have them as performers. So they perform at the event, you know, like a lot of the other, you know, a lot of the other characters at Disneyland. This is like a performance that they have, you know, right there on the walkway. So you get to see them doing their thing, you know, in live action. And they also have a Doctor Strange performance. So this is the Doctor Strange performance that they have. This is the Ancient Sanctum. It's in the ruins of a mysterious site where Doctor Strange performs. So that's the performance that they have, a little skit, I imagine, where you get to see Doctor Strange do his thing. This is the ride, the Spider-Man ride. This is Web Slingers, a Spider-Man adventure. This is the actual ride. This is the actual thing you go on. Kind of looks like a cable car or something like that. That's what it reminds me of anyway. Small cable car or something like that. I don't know exactly what the ride is for obvious reasons. They don't show you what it is because they don't like that. They don't want to show you exactly what the ride is. They want you to go on the ride. But this is also apparently for the ride. This is the lab. So you get to see, like, I guess, Peter Parker's lab. And that's Web Slingers. That's what it looks like when you actually go in. And then, of course, they've got tons and tons of merch. Heavily, heavily overpriced merch. So, because it wouldn't be Disneyland if they didn't have that. That is the web suppliers. And then there's a close-up of their web slinger, which kind of looks a little weird to me, honestly. I don't quite get it. But that's apparently a web slinger that they're selling. And that's, I guess, what it looks like. To me, it almost looks like a weird mouse or something like that. But it is what it is. So that is your preview of the Avengers campus at California Adventures Disneyland Anaheim.
All right. Well, there you go. Very cool. Very cool. Interesting. I saw some coverage, too, where on, I forget, it was one of the YouTube shows, and they had a whole big thing they did where I think Anthony Mackie was there, and he came out and basically gave the shield to the actor who actually portrays Captain America, you know what I mean, like at the campus, you know, as a part of the event, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Like on a regular basis anyway. And he was there just to kind of preview it. And I think Jon Favreau was there. And then it was, Paul Rudd was actually kind of the host of that, which I thought was kind of interesting. And he actually talked about the fact that he had I guess in one of the other ones, they have actually done a Ant-Man and Wasp attraction of some kind. Because it's interesting, because if you look in the background of some of those photos, I feel like that you can actually see the actual Guardians of the Galaxy ride, which I think is still a feature there. If you look off the distance, that weird spires.
It must have been on a different article. It's not on this one. Oh, no, here it is. This is the Ant-Man and Wasp restaurant that they have. There we go.
There you go. Yeah. I know that they had...
It's their test kitchen. It's an Ant-Man and Wasp-themed eatery. So that's how they cover Ant-Man and Wasp. I guess I just didn't go far enough. So here's some additional pictures also. Like, there's the Avengers headquarters.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I knew I had seen that. When you said that, I was like, wait a second. I know I saw they had like a restaurant. Yeah, there's the Ant-Man and Wasp restaurant, essentially.
Yeah, there you go. Very cool. All right. Well, that's fun. Do you have anything else you want to cover for pop culture?
No, I'm good.
Okay, cool. Do you have anything you want to do for Streaming Wars this evening?
Yeah, I think this is one of those deals where it kind of could have fit either, because it's not necessarily one or the other. A lot of times it does get a little difficult, at least for me, to determine, is this really Streaming Wars or is this more pop culture? This could really fit into either one, especially since I want to give a little bit of background on this story. So for those that don't know, we did actually try to review the Joe Exotic, the Tiger King series from Netflix. We actually did a review of it. And we, about 20 minutes into it, they basically took us down on YouTube. The Facebook version and the Twitter version still exist as far as I know. I'm sure the Twitch version, if we were doing Twitch at that time, because I don't even remember if we were, has gone by now because those ones don't stay up. But I believe you can still find the full episode on Facebook for sure, because I don't think Facebook takes anything down. So that should still be out there. But the YouTube version, there's only like 20 minutes of it because they took it down. And it was really bizarre because they didn't really give us a reason. I appealed the decision. And what they did was they restored the first 20 minutes and never told me anything else. They never gave me any comment. There's not an official flag of any kind on it for, like, say, copyright or, you know, their general term they use, which is like, you know, you violated our guidelines. It's basically all they give you, one or the other. It's either copyright or you violated our community guidelines. There's no flag on it. They just never restored the rest of the footage and never told me why. So very weird thing that happened to us with Tiger King. And this is one of the reasons we're leaving it to the end. So if YouTube does decide to take us down again for talking about Tiger King, hey, at least basically the whole rest of the episode went out and we got to talk about the more important things with our collector's corner and such. But I felt it would be neat to talk about this. And I think this Twitter feed actually is probably the best one because it shares the most stuff that I kind of wanted to share. So, and this is how I even saw this was happening. First of all, I did not realize there are two different Tiger King shows coming out. I don't know if you knew this, Dave, but there's two different Tiger Kings coming out. So the first one apparently is going to be having Nicolas Cage in the role. And that's something that they're doing with CBS. And it's based off a series of news pieces from a journalist. So some journalist was writing about Joe Exotic, I think in real time as the stuff was happening. And they're basing their show, which is going to be 8 episodes, on that. And Nicolas Cage is going to be Joe Exotic. Really crazy. I didn't know about this. I heard about this, but that's what they're doing. Now, the one that was sort of like trending is this Kate McKinnon. She's doing her own series. And that's actually based on the podcast. For those of you that have seen the documentary, you know, one of the main characters, you know, which he's a real person, but he's still a character of the Tiger King documentary, is that they had a documentary filmmaker who was doing a podcast with Joe Exotic. Okay. They're basing a show off of that. That's the other show that they're having. That one is going to be exclusive on the Peacock. So that's going to be a Peacock exclusive, and it's going to be based on the podcast. So it's different. It's actually different than the Nicolas Cage version, which is being produced by CBS. So they had a couple of new casting announcements. And what I like about this Twitter feed thing is that they show you the actor next to the real person. So for those of you that are basically fans of The Tiger King, you can see here that Sam Keeley, and I do apologize if I butcher the names, Sam Keeley will play John Finlay, who was one of Joe Exotic's husbands. So you can see the actor right next to the actual real person. Another person we have here is Brian Von Holt, and he's going to star as John Renke. And this was the manager at Joe's Zoo. And as they describe him, a loyal worker and friend until things go too far. And you can see, again, what the actor looks like versus what the real man looks like. Then we have Nat Wolff. He's going to play Travis Maldonado. Again, this is one of Joe Exotic's husbands. If you've seen the show, you know Joe Exotic had two. And you can see what the actor looks like versus the real person. And also you can see the real Joe Exotic in that picture as well. The reason this started trending was because of this. And I don't know if you heard about this, Dave, but Dennis Quaid is going to be in this mess. And he's going to be playing the journalist, the guy who basically sold the show, because this is the guy I was talking about. So he's going to be playing Rick Kirkham. And for those of you that don't remember, Rick Kirkham was the person who was basically doing like a documentary, and he was the one doing this official Joe Exotic podcast with him. And he was the one that was doing all the crazy videos with him and all that kind of stuff. Apparently this series is going to be based on his story, if you will, or at least the story from his perspective. So I guess it makes sense that Dennis Quaid is the biggest profile actor on this, because this is the guy, I guess, who sold the show. Is what, you know what I'm thinking? That he gets this casted by this, you know, big star, because I think Dennis Quaid is a big star. He's one of the only actors I actually even recognize on this show, to be honest with you. And this was the big announcement today that he was going to be taking this role. Had you heard about that, Dave?
I hadn't, but I'm kind of nervous to talk too much about Tiger King because what happened the last time we talked about Tiger King.
Hey, we're at the end of the show. If they take us down this time, hey.
I'm just saying, it was ridiculous what happened last time. So I'm not going to say anything for negative or anything about this at all, because I don't want to get in trouble again. It's crazy. Those of you who are watching the show, you have no idea how much trouble we get in on this show for the fact that, like, you know, our numbers are where they are. I mean, I swear it feels like we're under someone's thumb sometimes and they're just messing with us. So,
hey, morning cartoons. I am not on Instagram, but Dave, I believe you have an Instagram, don't you?
Yes, I am on Instagram. That's a good question. What is my Instagram? So here's the deal. I had an Instagram. I had about 800, 900 followers or people who were, you know, interested in what I was doing. And then I, in a fit of rage one night, Eric knows I'm prone to weird fits of rage. I got really mad about some stuff that was going on. So I went out there and I deleted my Instagram. I deleted my my Twitter, my Instagram, a couple other things. I pulled my YouTube channel down. I really kind of overreacted, but yeah. So my Instagram is actually Dave Beatty 2021. That is actually my Instagram, and primarily I post art on there. Now the Retrox Live actually does have an Instagram as well. But it hasn't been updated in a little while, and that's just Retro Rogues Live. But if you actually go to my Instagram, that is the one that actually gets updated fairly regularly. But it's Dave Beatty 2021 on Instagram.
There you go. So I just want to, as far as the Tiger King, I just kind of wanted to put out there that there are two different shows. It is confusing as far as which show is which. The one with Dennis, I think we had a little hiccup on the screen. The easiest way, we're probably getting taken down as I speak. So what I'm saying is the easiest way
Don't
for me to
that.
Separate the two, the easiest way for me to separate the two is the Dennis Quaid version is going to be on Peacock, and the Nicolas Cage version is going to be CBS. We don't know if it's going to be on Paramount Plus or if it's going to be on CBS, like one of their actual networks or whatever. I'm guessing it's probably going to be on Paramount Plus, because I'm not sure how you do a Joe Exotic show on broadcast TV at this point. You know what I mean? If you've seen the documentary, you know what I'm talking about. I'm not sure if it's ready for prime time, so to speak. It seems much more like a streaming show. In fact, I know the reason this Dennis Quaid version is going to be on Peacock is because NBC Universal said, this isn't going to work for USA. It's not going to work for NBC. Just no way. Because that was the original plan. The original plan for the Tiger King show for NBC Universal was that it was going to be on all three platforms. It was going to be on NBC broadcast, USA cable network, and streaming at the same time. But they said, you know what? That's not going to work. We're just going to put it on Peacock. So we'll see what happens with the Nicolas Cage version. But it is confusing. So I'm going to, if we talk about this in the future, I'm going to be talking about the Dennis Quaid version versus the Nicolas Cage version. So
just I'm going to try to suppress talking about the Tiger King as much as humanly possible.
Got to fight the power, Dave. You got to do it, man. You got.
Yeah,
do
but
it.
See, we don't win when we fight the power, Eric. That's the problem. we don't seem to ever win. That's the problem. We won a couple, it'd be worth fighting. It seems like every time we step up to fight, it's like we don't even get to fight. It's like, wait a minute, hey, you won't even let us in the ring.
The full episode is still available on Facebook, folks. You can still watch the and you can watch the edited version on YouTube because it's still there with no explanation behind the scenes as to why they restored basically the first 20 minutes and why the rest of it is gone. We have our theory. We have our working theory, but we don't know because they never told us. They never told us.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to stop talking about Tiger King. Do you have anything else for Streaming Wars?
No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. I want to do one more thing here real quick. If I can get it to work, which I know whenever I do this, it's always difficult for those of you actually listening to the podcast. I always try to remember like to describe things for the podcast audience, and then I always forget to do it.
David right. Mott says, I heard Ben Affleck is playing Kirkham on the other show.
You got to stop talking about this show, man. We're going to get in trouble.
Dude, that's breaking news. I didn't know Ben Affleck was going to be in the Nicolas Cage version. That's pretty cool, man. Breaking news. You heard it here first on the Retro Rogues Live. Hey, if other people can make up crap, we can too. So.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Okay. All right. So, since you have anything else, let's go ahead. Let's go to the outro. But before we do that, I want to go ahead and throw this out there. So we are in the midst. This is one of our newer episodes with our new format change. For those of you who may be new to the show, basically on Thursdays, we do a Collector's Corner Focus, which is what we did this evening. So primarily focusing on collectibles, comic books, trading cards, action figures, all those kind of fun things. That happens on Thursday at 7 o'clock. And then on Sunday at noon, we actually do a Rogues Retrospective. Rogues Retrospective is an older film that we want to talk about. Oftentimes something that either interests Eric, something interests myself, or it's something that you, those of you in the Rogues Gallery, might actually suggest. It's like, hey, I'd like to hear what you guys think about this. And kind of sort of that spirit, I wanted to go ahead and announce for Sunday what we're going to do. We are still good to go with what we discussed last week, right, Eric?
Absolutely.
All right. So here you go. I'm going to go ahead and put this up. We're going to go ahead and talk about it here just real quickly. So this is what we're going to be doing for the Rogues Retrospective for Sunday, everybody. We're going to be talking about the Rowdy Roddy Piper, Keith David, John Carpenter classic in my mind. We're going to be talking about that. They Live, a really great movie. So really excited to be doing that. We're going to be, again, doing a Rogues Retrospective for They Live on Sunday at noon.
Yes, absolutely. You know, we recently talked about the Funkos, and I think there was some interest from the Rogues Gallery, so we decided They Live was just a no-brainer. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
By the way, it is available on the Peacock. That relates to our previous Tiger King segment. This is actually going to be available on the Peacock. That's why I'm able to watch it, because I don't own it physically. So I'll be watching it on the Peacock.
And one of the things we're going to do in tandem with this, too, is I'm going to talk about one of the series that I worked at DC Comics, Grifter. Because when Scott Clark and I were signed on to work on Grifter over at DC Comics, it was pitched to us to basically be a fun superhero DC Universe version of They Live, that was the way that the series was actually pitched to me. So I want to show off some of the artwork actually from our new 52 Grifter series, because I know that Scott and I put a lot of love, care, and effort into that series, and talk about kind of how it connects back to They Live and what we were kind of drawing inspiration from. So if you're curious to hear a little bit about the work that Scott Clark and I did on Grifter for DC Comics and why we were told that it's kind of a superhero version of They Live, you'll be able to find that out on Sunday while we actually talk about the actual classic, in my mind, called classic film, They Live.
Absolutely.
All right, very cool. I think that's going to be it for this episode. So I want to thank you for hopefully watching or listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Beatty. I have been one of your hosts. You can basically see some more of my work and see my current passion over at KirbyTees.com. We've got a lot of really fun things over there at KirbyTees.com, a lot of cool t-shirts, primarily the artist-inspired t-shirts we want to talk about. We've got Brains Are Magic by Cyril Aerosmith. We've got the Skeletor shirt by the Janimal and myself, a lot of other fun selections, as well as also Retro Rogues Live t-shirts. So if you want to purchase a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt and support what we're doing here on the show, we would greatly appreciate your support. But again, all that's available over at KirbyTees.com. That's KirbyTees.com. But enough about that. I want to thank Eric Alexander, my great co-host, for providing, as always, his unique perspective and outlook and all these fun things. Talking about pop culture, streaming wars, all the great coverage she's doing with action figures. A lot of fun to see that unboxing. And for those who may be listening to the podcast, you may need to come over either to the Facebook, maybe even to the YouTube, and actually watch the episode so you can see the unboxing. Definitely check that out. Eric, please tell the folks who will be watching and listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm most active on Twitter. You can find me there at BassGod14, at BassGod14. My DMs are wide open, so you can always hit me up that way. Also, if you comment on the actual stream on the Twitter, more likely than not, I'll be the one that's answering you back. That's also the official YouTube and the official Twitch. So again, if you make comments there, more likely than not, I will be the one responding to you. Although Dave does also go on those different forums from time to time and respond to your comments. So we're always open to suggestions. That's why we did. We were talking about Joe Satriani's comic book today. That was a suggestion from the Rogues Gallery. Seeing there was some interest on They Live, because I think that's what David Motz was referencing. He said, thanks, guys. You're great. Because I think David was one of the people that actually wanted us to do They Live. So that's one of the reasons we're doing it. We're always open to suggestions. If you're hearing stuff out there, if you're wondering about something and maybe you want us to do a little bit of research on it because you're too busy and you just heard something and said, hey, I heard this was going to happen, this casting or this show's happening, we can always take a look and see what we can uncover. Because the bottom line is we do want to have a engagement with our audience. And along those lines, Jane says, as always, enjoyed the show. As always, Jane, we appreciate you being here. And David Motz says, love your work on Grifter, Dave. So with that, we'll leave David Motz with the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and find the live show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BassGod14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.